The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sunday in Redding, California. I think it's Sunday everywhere. Yesterday was Saturday. Tomorrow is Monday. So this I know. This must be We the People Radio. It's Sunday, 8 o'clock. We're at KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media, Shasta Redding. You like my glasses? These are my cheap readers when I can't find my real ones.
They are stunning.
Don't I look
Elizabeth
like...
Elizabeth has some...
They're like cat eyes.
Okay, I was just going to say, remember that cat lady? Every town had a cat lady.
I look like it. Oh, although they're
our cat lady in Hartford was Emily, and she used to ride the public bus with bags with stuff in it, and she would sit on the public bus and talk to the things in the bags.
Every community needs one.
We were kids, you know. It was like, oh, the cat lady was on my bus today.
When I was growing up here, there was a guy that I used to see walking all the time, and he would look for change on the ground.
How'd you know?
Because every time I saw him, he was bent over trying to pick up a dime or a nickel or a penny. And so one time I actually went over and talked to him.
How'd that work out?
Fine.
He gave you the glasses? Is that where they came from?
No, that's not where they came from. Nice guy.
I thought we were going to close the loop.
Well, God knows, then that would make these glasses about 40 years old.
Because Elizabeth's really, really old.
And you're right behind me.
Yeah. Well, yesterday we were on Sovereign Minds Radio, so if you need a good laugh, listen to the archive of Sovereign Minds yesterday morning.
Mark, I was going to say, it sounds like you picked up where you left off yesterday.
Oh, my gosh. The best one was a guy called right after the show, and he goes by Billy Bob. And Billy Bob calls and goes, okay, I get out of bed this morning, and I just turn on the radio, and you guys are on there. He goes, I felt like I was in one of those little kids' bouncy houses, and I couldn't get out.
Poor Mark. Not to mention the people who turned on the radio yesterday morning and heard you and were absolutely convinced they had lost a day.
Well, Mark actually thought that we would contribute something serious to the conversation, and I told him, I said, look, buddy, you called us, you knew what you were getting into. All right, so you have only yourself to blame.
Oh my goodness.
If you want to call us today and join in on the fun, the number is 530-605-4567. We have a great website at wethepeopleradio.us. We will have everything about today's guests, as well as everything that we've ever done. We've archived every show. Each show is an
individual link. I did a lot of things in between those Sundays, though. It's not on there.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Because, you know.
I was just checking.
TMI. So if you click on any one of the links from previous shows that we've done, you can email those out directly to anyone you know. We try to cover issues under the umbrella of fiscal responsibility, limited government, and adherence to the Constitution. And more than likely, what's happening to us here is happening to you anywhere and everywhere. So jump on the website, check it out, follow along while we're talking with our guest today.
Absolutely. We'll
check in with us shortly, but we'll chat a little bit. We had a great event yesterday.
Yes, we did. The Sheriff's Panel.
Yes.
And the Sheriff's events have moved from, let's see if we can get all the counties. Okay, started with Siskiyou County, went to MoDoc County.
Lassen.
No. We've had the sheriffs from there, but we haven't had the events.
Oh, you're
there.
Talking about the traveling road show.
Correct. And then we were in Weaverville. So we were in Trinity County with Bruce Haney. And last night we were in Tehama County with Sheriff Dave Hankrat. We were supposed to have 10 sheriffs. One got tied up with a family thing. Had a little problem there. But 9 sheriffs.
Not bad.
I had no idea how many people.
It was at the fairgrounds and it was packed. And, you know, I just have to kind of go off on my little tangent a little bit. First of all, it was a fabulous event. And if you have an opportunity to plug into one of these, please do so. If you can't attend one physically, as always, we make everything available to you, and Robert does a great job on the videos for those sheriff's events. But basically, they are very heartfelt, and these men are telling you about the devastation economically to their communities because of what state and federal agencies have done by way of unreasonable fees, regulations, and so forth. And as they decimate the natural resources industries, so there goes the communities. Crime goes up, alcoholism goes up. family abuse goes up, crime goes up, everything goes up, and they watch their communities slowly fade away. So pretty serious stuff. And if you live anywhere where your economy is driven by a natural resource industry, then you'll know what we're talking about.
But, you know, even the like in the city of Reading, I mean, even in our towns, we're having issues. I mean, we released lots of prisoners with Assembly Bill 109. So there are all sorts of things affecting our law enforcement. And these guys have come together not only to share ideas and get to know each other, but to really encourage the public to, you know, band together and support them. It's, I mean, I never knew my local sheriff.
And think about this. I had no idea how important they were. If you attend one of these events and you look around at the people that are there, for the most part, you're going to see people that are ranchers, farmers, loggers. I mean, people that are in natural resource industries. But it's not just stopping there. I had a friend that came with me, and she belongs to a miners club. And this miners club has started to feel the effects of some of the regulations from Fish and Game in the state of California. They literally had Fish and Game come to one of their club meetings and tell them what they can and cannot do. Who ever thought that a state agency would come to your club and tell you what you can and can't do? Just think about that and let that sink in for a minute. So she, just from a hobby standpoint, a recreational standpoint, she's starting to see some of the effects of what's going on. And even though she felt a little bit like a fish out of water, she got a real eye-opening experience yesterday.
Sure. And I mean, I have people tell me all the time that, well, there's nothing going on, this is all a bunch of hype, stuff like that. And I'm like, well, you know what? None of these guys are alarmists. They're not extreme in any way. It's like, come in and plug in and look. I mean, your 10th Amendment rights are secured by your sheriff. So if you care about the Constitution and your constitutional liberties as protected by the Constitution, the sheriff events are a great way to get on board with that. And these guys work hard with really some really serious budgetary issues.
They're struggling big time.
Like anything else, it's really nice to let them know that the people who support
the coach needs to know his support from, the, you know, the coach from needs us. To know he has a team.
Yeah, there you go. Helps a lot. So let's see. We were going to hear from Josh Bronis this morning about the Houndsman bill that's going through, but something must have happened. And he was just going to call us here at the very beginning. So sorry, I wasn't quite prepared to paraphrase this whole thing. But we will have him on next week. Bottom line is there's a bill, SB 1221, that is going through the California legislature that wants to ban the use of hunting with hounds. And if I did the same experiment as we did at our meeting, we had like 150 people there one time a couple of weeks ago, and I asked, how many people here are affiliated with hound hunting in some way? And one guy raised his hand. So obviously, it's a minority hunting group.
Well, and if you read the body of that bill, however, like most things that come down from some of these natural resource state agencies, they're vague. And
well,
for instance, and maybe our next guest can comment on this, but, you know, if you do work, for instance, in the woods and you take your dogs with you as protection and companionship, it has the ability to affect you as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, and at the end of the day, this is a huge economic thing. So for, well, okay. So let's make the link two ways. On the one hand, it's a freedom. So why would we take another freedom away? Then you have all the secondary things that go on, veterinary care. Some of these dogs are worth a lot of money. I had the one guy tell me his dogs are worth anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000. They're extremely well trained. That's what they're bred to do. And so if they don't do what they're bred to do, it's a little bit like taking a racehorse, you know, and putting them out in a little tiny, you know, corral.
And speaking
they
of breeding,
go a little bit nut. Oh, whoa.
And not speaking. Yeah. Yeah, let's change.
Bob's got his finger on the button. Okay,
but,
go ahead.
But very quickly, and I'm sure we'll touch on this next week when we talk about the Humane Society, but there is other legislation in the works that will try to affect breeders of dogs.
Yeah. Well, at the end of the day, see, this is, I guess this is the thing, because you look at the hound bill and you look at, okay, so maybe you're not a hunter at all. Maybe you're, if you were a hunter, you're not a hunter with dogs. But you know what? Every time they infringe on your gun rights, mm-hmm. here comes, oh, now you can't hunt this kind of birds, and then the next kind of birds, and
once
then
that,
deer,
and
then
once
that.
Once the door is open.
But at the end of the day, you know that the anti-gun people think that if there is no hunting, we don't need guns.
Mm-hmm.
It, even though the Second Amendment,
yeah, they come around the back door.
Was
what
never
they do.
Written about hunting. That's exactly the slope we're on. And once they've done it, reeling it back is almost,
yeah,
virtually impossible. So if we don't stand with these guys, we wind up
because literally
the drain.
as they chip away at individual right after individual right, little by little by little,
sure.
they'll eventually come to you. They will.
Absolutely. And then, you know, then you look back and you go, oh, wow, I guess that hound bill is kind of a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
The Humane Society of the United States, HSUS, if you just Google HSUS and do a little reading, I think you'll be super surprised. It's not little shelters with puppies and kitties. They're a giant, mm-hmm. giant organization that really, at the end of the day, doesn't even want us to own pets.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. And people will be like, what? Look up HSUS, Humane Society of the U.S., and just look at what they stand for. We're going to talk about that next week. I think you guys will be really, really, for those of you who go, wait a minute, isn't the Humane Society good?
And that is why we encourage you to
tune in. They're
good
locally to, you know, I mean, if you have a lost dog or whatever, we're not talking about that. We're talking about the big political machine, HSUS.
The one that funds. And also, you know, this is why we encourage you so much to go to the webpage at wethepeopleradio.us, because you will find out things here that you are not going to hear anywhere else.
Well, unless you listen to Sovereign Minds and we break in and...
Yeah, but we just talk.
Okay, wait, for everybody...
But all you're going to hear things you're not going to hear on We the People.
Yeah. Okay, well invite,
all we do is talk about
we'll invite Mark and Linda on, and we'll just, you know, turn it into one of those Seinfeld talk about nothings. But, okay, we really got out of hand yesterday was when, you know, Mark did like spooky voice.
Yeah.
And then Elizabeth did spooky voice.
And I came out sounding like a sheep.
Yeah, so then, bam. Down
which morphed into a goat.
Yeah. She was like goat girl. It wasn't pretty.
That's great.
It's like, what kind of a scary voice is that?
Oh, nice picture of Support Rural America on our local newspaper this morning.
Really?
Yay. Yeah.
Our local newspaper was there?
Yeah.
Is the article good?
I don't know. I haven't read it yet.
We're going to read the article and report back.
Okay.
All right. We are going to call our guest, Mike Dubrasich. If you have not read anything or looked at what's going on, his organization is called Give Us Our Land Back. He is up in Oregon. He's been a practicing professional forester in Oregon since 1975. And for the last 31 years, he's been a private consulting forester specializing in forest biometrics. He's organized three different consulting firms, served as the Oregon chapter chair of the Association of Consulting Foresters of America. He's the author of a book. It's called A Guide to Innovative Tree Farming in the Pacific Northwest. And he's going to talk to us about this Give Us Our Land Back project, which is a coalition spearheading the petition to defederalize Oregon lands. And, I mean, everybody's burning up out there. We all have too much fuel on the ground.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
The let it burn philosophy has kind of taken over and gotten to a really bad place, as you can see in Colorado, New Mexico.
The states are literally burning up.
And so our public lands that we pay for, that we can't access because a lot of the roads are being closed.
And here's the question. I want people out there to ponder.
Yes.
If the Forest Service no longer manages public forest land, what do they do all day and what are we paying them for? Just think about that for a while.
You went right to the end, didn't you? Okay, since I can do it, I'll do the scary voice. There.
You want me to do my goat? Want me to be goat girl?
Yeah, you can do... At which point I think I sang the Casper song, which I'll leave off.
Yeah. Okay.
So anyway, we're going to come back with Mike. We're going to talk about what's going on with all this stuff and what people can do about it and kind of what the issues are and stuff. So I think you'll like it. Go to wethepeopleradio.us, plug in, read a little bit. We'll be back with you in 2 minutes. You're listening to KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
This one's for the sheriffs.
Go, sheriffs!
A creek in the rocks and the law and the law one, I broke the law and the law one.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
Loving the free and feeling spirit. Hug a tree when you get near it. Digging the snow and the rain and a bright sunshine.
No, we're not going to talk, Bob. We're just going to look at you.
Welcome back. Hugging a tree when you're near it. Hey, so you're listening to We the People Radio, and actually, I did not introduce us this morning, although I'm sure people are pretty
plugged
in.
Was it because I distracted
now.
You?
You always do. You're like this little kid that likes to pick.
I know.
Pick.
I totally am.
I have bruises on my forearm. You're joining Elizabeth Woodward, Aaron Ryan, and Bob Martin. I love the music, Bob.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
You're so awesome.
Everyone loves the music.
I just like totally get my nostalgia fix every Sunday morning. How cool is that?
It's awesome.
It's our mini oldies show. Yes.
That's why we get up on Sunday morning.
Because otherwise, I'd still be in bed.
Yeah.
Early. Not. Hey, so welcome back. We're going to be joining our guest very shortly. Just wanted to, something I really want to find out from him is there are, I believe 12 states, 12 or 13 states throughout the country that require foresters to be licensed. California is one of them. And my husband is a licensed professional forester, and it's kind of interesting because they hold the license over the heads of some of these foresters, some of these state agencies, in order to gain enthusiastic compliance. So it's going to be interesting to find out why Oregon does not require licensing. Logging timber in Oregon apparently is a cakewalk.
Really?
Compared to the state of California, yeah. So it's going to be fun to find out about that.
Okay, there's a lot of people out there slapping their forehead going, duh, everything's easier outside of California.
Of course.
You could go almost anywhere.
Yeah.
We just are really hung up on rules and regulations. There's another bill pending.
Angry. People need to know.
I'm the angry bill fairy.
Do you leave dollars under people's pillows?
I do. I fly around at night in a little outfit.
Now that would be something to see.
Yeah, that's kind of scary. Sorry, bad visual, everyone. AB 2179, Assembly Bill 2179 in the California legislature. I would encourage you to look that up. That bill, although I do not have it in front of me, at the end of the day, it would take the fine on anybody who was deemed to have, had a problem with an endangered species, including the little goldfish, coho salmon.
It could be something that you step on in your
own
yard.
Flora, fauna.
I certainly hope that ants do not become an endangered species because we are so screwed
flies,
if that happens.
They tried to lower the speed limit.
They were doing something with mosquitoes.
No, it was flies. They tried to lower the speed limit in Southern California because they were killing an endangered fly on the highway by going that fast. They had to go below 45 so that the flies could
go
over the cars.
These environmental wackos they need straight jackets.
That's an environmental wacko moment there.
Oh, and how many people collect rainwater? I mean, it's winter, it's raining a lot, and you think, maybe I'll just store up a little rainwater to use in my vegetable garden in the summer. Well, for their third try, from what I read, they're attempting to bring back that legislation to create a legal framework for how you in your own yard can collect rainwater and how you can use it or can't use it.
They catch you out there with your tongue out.
You're
going
screwed.
Right to jail.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Turkeys with their heads back.
Yeah.
Sucking down that rainwater. Right to jail.
Because they want to own the water that comes out of the sky.
Well, and they probably want to own the sky, too. So, we don't want to limit it just to the rain that comes out. But, there's some pretty spooky legislation. So, AB 2179 is a biggie. We need people to really make some phone calls. Had some success last week. Sometimes people think, oh boy, make a bunch of phone calls on a bill, nobody cares. Interestingly enough, we kind of targeted five of the senators on the Natural Resource Committee that were either moderate Democrats or moderate Republicans. So the people who were super on one side or the other, we didn't put them on the list, just the folks that were kind of open to suggestion. And people started hammering away. Apparently, the phone calls came right away. I got an email from one of the legislators' offices who said, "Dear Mrs. Ryan, please tell people we are voting no on this bill. They can call. We will take their calls. We are happy to receive their calls, but we are definitely voting no."
Excellent. Yeah, you passed that on. I read that.
And so that was good.
So never doubt the power of the people, and just not on a legislative note, but we had the Barnes & Noble incident.
Ooh,
in our neighborhood last week. Barnes & Noble, and I'm sure this is nationwide, was displaying a book called The 50 Shades of Grey, and that is basically adult soft porn. And
it was kind of really big.
Yeah, it was nasty.
Yeah, it was.
And they specifically displayed those books right next to the teenage bestsellers. And prior to that, they were next to all the children's toys and
puzzles and porn.
Yeah.
It was like, what?
So obviously, we took care of that at the local level, and between a couple of radio shows and a whole lot of emails and a lot of participation from people who, you know, believe that you need to protect the children in the neighborhood. If you go to our Barnes & Noble now, you can't find those books. Now, I know they're there, but they moved them. It took a lot, but within a week, they were out of sight.
That's kind of great.
We're not telling people not to read them. Just don't put them next to what our kids are reading. Don't even go there.
Yeah, don't make them well, because that all started with the owner of the station here, Carl Bott. Went into Barnes & Noble, and two 12-year-old girls
were reading the book.
We're reading the book, you know, with the handcuffs on the front. Nice.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Just what you want your daughters.
Doing something about it makes a difference.
And don't doubt what you, as one person, can do by making a phone call.
Absolutely.
Because multiply yourself by about 1,000, and you're not the only one doing it.
So the books are out of sight now.
Yeah.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
That's probably why they say that, huh?
And in case anybody from Barnes & Noble is listening, we will continue to monitor.
Do you know if that
and
was
And thank a, you for doing that.
If that came from corporate or if the local
We do not know.
Store decided it did have
but
the...
But I happen to be in the store standing by one of the... by the information kiosk when one of the employees was complaining that people were calling about the book. Mm-hmm. And actually making fun of the people who were calling about the book. And... being glib about the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, really? And then went over and on the phone, was telling somebody from somewhere, I don't know if it was another employee or corporate office or whatever, but no, people are calling about this book. I mean, what do they want us to...
I love it when you do your voices.
Supervise what everybody reads. I mean, come on, how ridiculous is that? No kids are going to read this book. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? We're only here because kids were reading the book.
That's where it started.
And then she walked in, so of course I'm like fake, I'm fake filling out an information request at the information kiosk, totally listening. And then she goes over to talk to another employee, and I had to go over and look at a book on that table so I could listen, and she's like, can you believe this, blah 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 blah. Meanwhile, she had told a lady I work with that the books were already moved, and they weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And then they sat there and talked about how, wow, we're just gonna leave them there,
and it was
not gonna matter.
It's kind of interesting.
She didn't think
because
we were gonna follow up,
because when I went in and checked on them, and I complained to the resident manager, who was about 12 years old, and I said, sweetheart,
I was probably the one who was talking like this,
you just messed with the wrong community.
Yeah, it was kind of fun.
You really did.
So, people got busy.
Yeah.
We have
our guest held hostage on the phone. Don't we?
Well,
we do?
We do, but we have a caller who would like to make a comment first. Tom from Quartz Valley.
Oh, great.
Go, Tom from Quartz Valley.
Hey, how are you doing this morning?
We're great. Can't you tell?
Sorry I missed the sheriff's meeting last night, but I had a... Anyway, I'll tell you about it sometime. two quick points I wanted to make. 2179... We're going to start a call campaign tomorrow on that.
Nice.
Again, it's extremely important. That's going for bid, and or bid. It's going for vote. And the next point I want to make, you brought up the U.S. Humane Society. If
yes.
you go to the department, we know the Department of Fish and Game is being funded by the U.S. Humane Society.
Mm-hmm.
They run their warden schools and various things. If you go to the DFG. State of California website, they now are starting a new scientific website where they're going to have their own in-house scientists and peer review.
Do they have those little science kits that you can buy at some of the toy stores? Is that what they're using?
No, what they're using is they're using the if you go through the list, all these people are from the Humane Society.
Wow.
That's who's going to run the DFG science. So
oh
you
my,
can imagine
thank you for
what
that.
Kind of fight we're going to have.
So on this bill, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you read the body of it, is it vague enough that it's completely left open to the interpretation of Fish and Game should they decide they want to fine you?
I don't think it's vague enough to say if they decide they want to fine you. If you remember here a year or so ago, Aaron could probably help with that, but DFG was not funded anymore from the general fund state of California.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They want to survive on fines and fees.
Right.
And so I don't think fines the problem. The scenario that I use is if you go out fishing and the limit's 5 fish and you catch 6 and you just don't really realize you've done it, we've probably all done that, you get caught. What it says in there that you get cited for that, and then the Department of Fish and Game, it says the fine shall be sufficient to deter repeat offending.
Yeah, I love that language.
Okay,
yeah.
so that sets you right up for whatever, and it can and it's for every and the $20,000 is per event. So if you go out there and you kill two. Willful, whatever their definition is killing, where this is going really bad is coho's a big thing up here.
Yep.
If you get caught killing a coho or whatever, the problem is that you used to, it had to be willfully killing the fish. Now, if Fish and Game takes this over, you can't have an attorney. Well, you can, I guess, but you can't go to a court of law and have a judge make a decision between Party A and Party B. Party A is making the decision about what they're going to do to Party B, and if you don't like that decision, you can go in and have it reviewed, but the review committee is either the director of Department of Fish and Game or his appointees. So you can tell where that's going to go. So it's a terrible, terrible law. It's going to really, really put us in bad straits, and we're going to be, especially with water use, all the things that Fish and Game, I could spend a whole hour telling you all the things that Fish and Game are involved in, but from water all the way to fish and owls and all kinds of things. But anyway, I just wanted to bring up that point because it's very important, and we are down to the 11th hour on this thing.
Well, thanks, Tom.
We are down to the wire. And so, Tom, what I'm going to do for our listeners is I will put this email that describes the legislation and gives the contact phone numbers. We only have 4 senators left to contact that are on the Natural Resources Committee that are really available to be swayed or influenced or convinced or whatever word you want to use. But do it with phone calls. The emails, if you're out of district, sometimes get blocked. So make the phone calls. It worked on one of them. We got to take one off the list. So we'll post that on windypeopleradio.us.
When does this go for a vote?
Don't have a date.
Okay.
Just yet.
Okay.
But it's soon.
Yeah. And the killer is that once it goes to the Natural Resources Committee, if it goes, I mean, it blew through the assembly. This is an assembly bill, and it shot through there. So if it clears the Natural Resources Committee,
mm-hmm.
we don't have the votes in the Senate mm-hmm. to really stop it. So that's a super dangerous roll of the dice. We don't want to do that.
That's just going to decimate.
Yeah, it's going to hurt a whole lot of people. So we could really use people's help on that. So we will get that posted on the radio page.
Yeah, just to interject, if you go through the stream and you think about this, and I've thought about it a lot. This is just basically an added tax. They need the money to survive, so you know what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. And by leaving it open to the fact that, okay, whatever it's going to take to deter you, that could make your personality. If you get ticked off at the warden writing you the citation, they write that up, they can say, okay, fine, we're going to have to find this guy $8,000 just because he's a hard-nosed guy, and we got to make it so he's not going to do this anymore.
They've basically turned away, closed their eyes, and said, do what you need to do. To fund yourself and keep your job.
And the Humane Society is behind this. The U.S. Humane Society is behind this. And the problem is that there's more Humane Society members in the state of California than there are gun owners. by a large margin.
Yeah. Boy. And they so we're gonna really hit this Humane Society thing hard next week, mm-hmm. and talk to the hound hunting guys about that. And I would imagine we'll need another Humane Society program after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
people need to know.
So tune in next week, Tom. How's
and I always do.
Enjoy beautiful Quartz Valley.
I always do. And thank you very much. And thanks for the opportunity.
Talk. Absolutely.
Bye, Tom.
Love to hear from
thanks
you.
Thanks
see
for calling
in. See you Monday at the Fish and Game hearing. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
The Farm Bureau up there is suing the Fish and Game in Yreka, in Siskiyou County, but the trial's in Yreka, and the second part of it comes on Monday. Da-da-da-da. So I'll let you know next week what happened. Okay, we have to take a swift break. We need to come back with Mike, and we need to start talking about forests. I knew if we said Humane Society, we'd be doomed. All right, you're listening to We the People Radio here at KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
Streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
We're back. Welcome to We the People Radio. We are going to get serious now because we've had just enough fun. We've blown past about 45 minutes.
Well, all of a sudden we said Humane Society. Whenever you say Humane Society, it's like ripping the lid off Pandora's box.
And you know, the thing that's so disturbing to me is there are so many people out there that have a complete misconception about some of these organizations. They really think that they're good. And it's just sad. It takes an extraordinary amount of effort to get people to open up their eyes.
Well, and it isn't even because they don't want to. It's just, you know, we're bombarded with stuff all day long. It's kind of like when people say, hey, have you seen that commercial, you know, about something? And I've typically, if I'm watching something, if it's not on DVR, I don't watch it. So right. I miss a lot of that. I mean, that's kind of the way our lives are these days. We pick and choose.
Yeah.
And some of the things we just don't see.
So we're gonna get to Mike Dubrasich. Say
Dubrasich.
Dubrasich.
I just got word from Mike that it's Dubrasich.
No,
Dubrasich.
I had it
very
all figured out.
Good, Bob.
Oh, Mike.
So, Mike, can we just call you Mike?
I talked to you on the phone and I forgot to get the pronunciation.
Can we just call you Mike?
Hello. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Can we just call you Mike?
Sure.
Mike D. That's so much easier.
Okay. No, really. Tell us how you say it.
Dubrasich.
Dubrasich. Okay, we're good.
Well, good morning.
Well, good morning to you.
Hey, so I've really been looking forward to this particular conversation because my husband is a registered professional forester here in the state of California and obviously has to be licensed. And you know, we've spent the last 10 years watching the demise of the forestry industry. So he's listening while we're on the air and really excited to find out what the state of things are in Oregon.
Good. Yeah, I'm happy RPS are listening. I got my forestry degree at Berkeley in 1974, but I immediately drove to Oregon and I've been practicing here ever since. So that's 38 years as a professional forester. The last 31 as a private consultant, specializing in measurement of forest growth and yield and forest stand development history. But that's not what we're here for. I have a new organization, a group of us, a citizens coalition formed called Give Us Our Land Back. And we're petitioning Congress to return title and jurisdiction of federal lands in Oregon to the chartered counties of Oregon. And we're gathering signatures on a petition to defederalize Oregon lands online at giveusourlandback.org. And we're reaching out to everyone, not just Oregonians, but everyone throughout the country, to sign our petition, because giving our land back to us would be best for everybody. It would be best for the economy, for the environment, for social well-being, not just of Oregonians, but of everybody in the country.
Now, so this organization that you have created, is it a coalition?
Yeah, that's what we call ourselves. Okay. It's a group of people who are like-minded.
And what different groups are you pulling from? How many people, what types of people have come together for this?
Well, we've asked a variety of different groups to become endorsing organizations. But really, we're focusing on county commissions. Because we want the land to go back to the county, mm-hmm. we're working from the ground up at the county level. And we're approaching the county commissions of the 36 counties in Oregon and asking them to endorse our petition and help us to draft the legislation that we need to make the petition happen. The petition is something, you know, it's an expression of our grievances, but what we're really doing here is creating legislation that we're going to present to the counties, to the state, and to the federal government, to the U.S. Congress, to enable the transition of title to the counties in Oregon. It's our approach, it's the Oregon approach, it's a little different than, say, the Utah approach. Utah passed a law signed by the governor that gives Utah counties the power to use eminent domain to condemn federal land. So 22 counties in Utah have already condemned federal roads, that is, using eminent domain to change the title from federal government to county government. Because those roads really are county public roads, and the federal government was going to close them down and destroy them. And so the way the Utah approach was use eminent domain. Arizona has a different approach that passed their legislature, but the governor vetoed it last month. So we can't say that approach is active, but they were going to have the land go back to the state. And the state was going to then manage the public land. And if they were to sell it, give 95% of the receipts to the federal government. We don't want to sell the land. We don't want, this is not about privatizing the land. We want the land to remain public land. But we want the public that owns it to be the counties, not the federal government.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, and when you think about it, the counties are, you know, from an economic standpoint, are directly impacted by what happens on that public land. And in addition to that, as, you know, any of the sheriffs could attest to, they need the roads open for search and rescue. I mean, there's seriously a public safety issue.
Big public safety.
When the federal government decommissions those roads, number one, you can't get in to fight forest fires, and number two, you can't get in to rescue people if they've gotten in there and are hurt.
Yes, indeed. And another thing that the sheriffs point out, which we certainly agree with, is constitutionally those lands belong to the counties anyway. They never really should have been entitled to, the title should never have been given over to the federal government.
It was a slow creep. And you probably know the history of the Forest Service, Mike, because I think that every professional forester knows the very beginnings and the history of the Forest Service, but it's changed so much over the last 20 years. It's completely turned into an organization that nobody recognizes.
Yes, and we're really not. This is true. The Forest Service has done some very terrible things. They've instituted Let It Burn. They burned millions upon millions of acres. They've firebombed my watershed. They've shut down the natural resource industries in the Pacific Northwest and bankrupted Oregon. We have, for the last 20 years, under the Northwest Forest Plan to save the spotted owls, we've had the highest unemployment, the highest business bankruptcy, the highest home foreclosure, the highest hunger rates. You know, 25% of Oregon families, rural Oregon families, are on food stamps today. We have 80% of our K through 12 students on federal free lunch programs because their families qualify. And we are a resource-rich state, but 53% of the land is owned by the federal government, and they have shut it down. And for no good reason. The spotted owl population has crashed by 60%. This has been a giant experiment, and the experiment has failed.
You know, and I just don't think that you can drive the point home enough that the natural resources, the natural resource industries, and every single ancillary profession, job, industry that comes as a result of that, that is the economic engine of our society.
Absolutely. You know, the economic engine is creation of wealth. You know, it's not jobs, it's wealth. If you create wealth, you create jobs. But creating wealth is what it's all about. And agriculture, particularly renewable agriculture like forestry, uses the sun and the rain and the soil to create wealth. It's like a machine, a perpetual machine that keeps putting out food and fiber, which is the raw materials that then can be manufactured into thousands and thousands of different products upon which people depend for food, clothing, and shelter. It is the fundamental driver and has been the fundamental driver as long as there have been human beings here, which is, you know,
a while.
15,000 years or
it
more.
It depends on how you think we got here, I guess.
Yeah, depends on who you're talking to.
Depends on whether or not you're into the slime theory. Hey,
well, it's been Clovis people dated to 12-5. The pre-Clovis people now, I feel, in North America go back at least 15,000 years.
Wow.
I have friends that are tribal, you know, and they talk about tracing their lineage back 800 generations.
Jeez.
So if you figure 20 years per generation, that's 16,000 years.
Yeah, and here we are. Imagine that. We need to take a quick break and thank our advertisers. When we come back, Mike, could you talk a little bit about why we have a let it burn policy? Because I think for most people, when we go past that part, people go, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. So we're going to talk about that a teensy bit when we come back. You're listening to KCNR, 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Time is truly wasted. There's no guarantee. Smile is in the making. You gotta fight the powers that be. Got so many voices.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
Green Door, what's that secret you're keeping?
There's an old piano and they play it hot behind the green door. Don't know what they're doing, but they laugh a lot behind the green door. Wish they'd let me in so I could find out what's behind the green door.
Gratefully, they don't let us in, so we'll never know.
Green is like, I don't know, I used to love that color.
As an Irishman, I find it offensive. They've stolen our color.
Yes, they have, and I'm Irish as well, so...
Irritating.
Yeah.
The Icelanders don't really have a color. We're Icelandic. I guess maybe that's
Yeah, I imagine you'd be
white?
Transparent.
What color is ice?
They're transparent.
By the way, we...
why am I so big if I'm transparent? We
have a caller from Trinity County on the line with a question.
Speak, oh, caller from Trinity County.
Hi.
Hi.
You can say more than hi. Speak a sentence.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we
can.
Good morning.
Am I on?
You are.
You are.
Am I on the air?
You are.
You're on, Diane.
Hi.
Go ahead.
You're on your cell phone, aren't you? Is this Diana Sheen?
No, this is Diane Richards.
Oh, okay.
Hi, Diane Richards.
Hey, hi.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, I want to thank Mike for being here with us in California. He really knows what he's talking about. Many of us from Trinity participated in that Spotted Owl. It was sort of a little presentation. It was like a joke, like a sixth grade science fair, and you really there was no public speaking or public discussion. But they wouldn't even show us the map that they have, but they didn't bring them. They brought some other maps showing where the exempted areas are of this Spotted Owl proposal of expansion of millions of acres. But one of the things that what is very interesting that they propose, and it's already closed, and I believe they're going to begin doing this, they want to kill they have been, I understand, Mike, maybe you could elaborate on it. They're killing barbels, which is a subspecies of this Spotted Owl. I understand they interbreed and they have hybrids. And if they're killing them, perhaps they're actually killing the hope of, you know, the way that the spotted owl can survive. I mean, it's almost like killing a black dog so a white dog can live. It's some sort of eugenics.
Hey, I know they're killing these owls with shotguns. I think they're just trying to, you know, silence the witnesses.
It's almost like selling coho salmon at Costco.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I asked the spotted owl specialist there at the presentation if the hybrid owl, when they feed back in to the spotted owl, all the babies come out spotted completely. Because all it is the difference of the spot. One sort of long spot, a bar, and the other ones are spots. And I said, well, what about the F2 generations? In other words, the next generation, and they breed back in, which anybody that breeds animals know, you usually get that the original animal again when you use a hybrid like that. And she agreed that there would be hybrid vigor for the animal, but she had no idea what would happen or what does happen. So they may be actually killing off the spotted owl's ability to reinvent itself and survive. What do you say to that, Mike?
Well, it may be actually killing off spotted owls. You can't tell the difference unless you do a DNA test. And so they're blasting away at these hoot owls. They're all hoot owls. And they're not going out there and collecting, you know, the remains to do a DNA test to determine what species they are. They interbreed. They're basically the same species. Important point, Diane, and I'm glad you brought it up, is that the science is pure bunkum. You know, from Northern California to the Canadian border, they shut down our economy, millions of acres, because they said, well, the owl needs more habitat. This isn't wildlife biology. This isn't a scientific thing. And as a matter of fact, that failed. This was a scientific theory that was applied that didn't work. You know, the rocket never got off the launching pad. When they turned the switch on, the lights didn't come on. It was something that didn't work. Bad science. And now they're saying, well, oh, we need to shoot the barred owls, and that'll fix all the problems. But it won't. It's more actually a ridiculous science. It doesn't follow the principles of wildlife biology 101. They say, well, we need to set aside another 9 million acres. If we just take another 9 million acres and impoverish the world a little more, that'll save the owls. But it won't. In all these cases, it's really, you know, an abuse of the word science.
Hey, Mike.
This is what we're getting from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife.
Mike,
these people are posers, they're cads, they're bounders, they're frauds, they're not doing anybody any good, and their science is bogus.
Okay.
Hey, before we go on our break, when we come back, I'd like to talk about the ramifications of the expansion of the spotted owl habitat. I don't think people understand.
Okay, guys, we're going to get cut off by the news here. We have a 5-minute news break. We're going to come back with Mike and Diane. If you'd like to hang with us, it's a 5-minute break, or you can call us back. We'd love to hear from anybody else. The phone number here is 530-605-4567. You're listening to We the People Radio. We'll be right back with you.
KCNR Shasta Redding.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
we hope you are too, with a fresh cup of coffee. You are joining hour two.
If they're not, how would we know?
I don't know. I don't care. I'm just being polite. Welcome back to We the People that. Radio. You're joining Elizabeth Aaron and Bob Martin. We are in our hour two. Bob just said when we were coming back on the air that we need an hour of fun and frivolity, and then we need a two-hour show after that.
Or maybe we do an hour of serious and then an hour of goofing off and an hour of serious.
Yeah, we need 3 hours somehow.
All the psychiatrists in town are going, do it, do it, do it.
Speaking of psychiatrists.
All we got to do is find more sponsors.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, speaking of
anybody,
that.
Oh, you should.
Yes, do that. Do
you
that.
You should make a, well, who's in charge of sponsors?
You Elizabeth? Are now. Oh. You are. We suck at it, so you do it. Bob, yeah. Bob just got hired.
Speaking of that, we're looking for volunteers to help us raise money. Okay.
Yeah, because we're not in the
state's budget anymore, so we're on our own, and we will do what
were
we need to do.
Were we in the state's budget before?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm making a point, making a joke, making fun of.
And I was just making fun of you, making fun of.
There you
Bob,
go.
Bob, you want to join in?
Well, but seriously, folks, if you
no, wait a minute, that came out funny.
Are interested in helping keep this program on the air, or maybe even expand it? Give Elizabeth or Aaron a call. You want to give your email or phone number? What do you prefer?
It's all on the website.
It's all on the website. WeThePeople.us.
WeThePeopleRadio.us.
WeThePeopleRadio.
We would have hogged up WeThePeople.us, but we couldn't get it.
Because face it, I mean, be honest, folks. You know, we wake you up on Sunday mornings. Right?
And for the other people, you know, we make you angry.
So either way, you got your blood going.
You got something happening.
Thanks to us.
All right. So
and
we
if
still...
you if you can't find it, call me and I will call me at the radio station. I'll give you Aaron's cell phone.
Yeah, because everybody else has it. Why
as long
not?
As nobody knows where we live.
530-515-7135.
Just go to the record searchlight. I'm pretty sure it's there.
Yeah, it probably is. It's under the comment section.
You're here. Are you listening? Everybody, are you listening, Tree Bones?
Everybody who caps on us, call me 530-515-7135. Okay, so we have Diane back on the line, and we also have Mike on the line. So Diane had a question still about Spotted Owl. So take it away, Diane.
Yeah, I have another question in you know how failed their policy is because of their forest management policy that's let it burn. Where they're not actually clearing the forest, they're not keeping the fuel loads low. They're like 10 times what they're supposed to be right now. Trinity Shasta's stage for a catastrophic fire like nobody's seen since maybe the 30s when it happened in Oregon. It's like setting off 5 atomic bombs when these big ones go. And these fires that they not only are they not putting out and they're not tending the forest, I believe is causing, and I believe Michael knows this, is causing the death of many, not just the spotted owls, but other wildlife, and harms our communities as well. But they're not clearing the fuel loads, which used to be done when there was logging. They would roll that up in the contract that when they took out trees, they'd have to take the fuel loads as well. So it was a win-win for both forest management
Diane, for those that are a little unfamiliar with some of the terminology, tell us what a fuel load is.
A fuel load is dead and down trees, brush, stuff on the ground that will burn very easily. It's like stacking a bunch of firewood under these our beautiful trees, and we don't want that. It needs to be clear the ground. They say in their own manual anywhere between 5 to 20 tons per acre is acceptable, and we're running something like 150 to 200 tons per acre up here in Trinity Shasta. That's how bad the management is, and not only can supposedly the owls can't get their prey as easily because all this junk is on the ground, but it burns. There's no cool running fires like they want to talk about in the good old days or what have you. These are going to be catastrophic fires that burns everything in its path. So the environmentalists that say, oh, you know, don't cut wood or save the spotted owl or whatever, what they don't realize is this mismanagement and this policy is going to actually end not just the spotted owls, but everything out there when these catastrophic fires come through. So I'd like Mike to talk about that mismanagement of the U.S. Forest Service, the mismanagement of our forest, and how it is affecting not only the spotted owl, but all the animals, and how, you know, what can we do to change this? Thank you, Mike.
Well, Diane, what we're trying to do is we want the federal government to give us our land back. That's the change we're looking for. we don't like having this outside agency, which is operates in a manner that can only be described as insane, owning our watersheds anymore. You know, they lock the gates and say you can't do any stewardship on these lands because we need to protect it for the owl, and then they catastrophically burn the forest up in holocausts that have never been seen before in history. The fuel loading, the amount of biomass on the ground is 10 times any historical level, and they is a continuity of fuel across the landscape, and they're letting it burn. When a fire starts, they don't go rush to put it out. There's no aggressive initial attack. And in fact, in my watershed, they actually drop bombs on the forest while it's burning. They napalm it. It's called the aerial ignition, ping pong balls filled with nitroglycerin shot out of a helicopter into the canopies. The glycerin explodes and is like a glue that coats the canopies and causes an instant canopy fire in old growth spotted owl habitat. That's the irony here. They broke our economy in order to save the habitat, and they are firebombing the habitat. It is cynical. It is destructive. They want another 9 million acres to destroy, and we're saying enough's enough. No more. We're tired of junk science, and we're tired of deliberate napalming. I mean, this isn't Vietnam. We're not at war. You don't need to drop bombs on us. You just need to give us our land back. In Trinity County, like my county, Linn County in Oregon, is 70% owned or more by the federal government. They've locked the gates. They're burning it down. In 2008, we had catastrophic fires that covered almost 1 million acres in Northern California. 12 people were killed. These were let it burn. These were not fires that they went to put out. These were fires they dropped back 40 miles and said, just let it go.
Why?
You know,
why, Mike?
They have
What's
all kinds
of
names
of
for
that?
It. And they're, you know, basically at war with Northern California. They're trying to destroy you, as they are Oregon and Washington. And in Oregon now, we're saying, this is all, we don't want any more of this. This is too much. The land is our land. It's constitutionally our land. The federal government was supposed to be trustee, but they have violated the trust. You can just leave now. We're asking very nicely. We're not taking the land back with pitchforks at the federal building. We are petitioning Congress at giveusourlandback.org to please, thank you very much, return title and jurisdiction to the counties. Because we in the counties locally can do the best job of caring for our own watersheds. We aren't out to destroy the spotted owl. We're actually out to save it. We like the owl, the deer, the elk, the other wildlife. We're not going to run out and clear cut it. They're running out and firebombing it. They're leaving vast tracts of wasteland behind. We're not going to do that. We're going to manage it in a sustainable and healthful and productive way.
And I always,
you know, when the federal government needs something done to their land, they have to come to the locals anyway, because the locals are the only ones who know how to do it.
And
it's
Mike,
the RPFs and the loggers and the haulers and the other people in the community that actually know where everything is and what needs to be done out there. And this, we just are going to take away the overlords.
What?
The federal government, the Fish and Wildlife Service, those guys can go away.
We hey,
manage it ourselves and actually save the spotted owl.
Mike,
yes.
Don't you think it's ironic that the whole premise of their methodology is to preserve wildlife, to protect endangered species, but what happens to them when you have a catastrophic fire?
They burst into flame, you know?
And what's the point?
It
why would they
everything.
Do it like this?
You go in there afterwards, there's nothing left alive except some root systems deep under the ground and maybe a few burrowing animals that got deep under the ground. Everything above ground is dead. The temperatures are up over 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. All the oxygen has been consumed or is consumed during the fire. There's nothing to breathe. It's too hot. Life is extinguished. This is 100% mortality fires, and you walk through this afterwards, and you know there's nothing left alive.
And what is the point of a policy like that? How do they justify that?
You know, I think that it is not useful to query them on their motivations anymore.
No, but
they don't make sense. What they're doing is insane. It's no good to talk to a crazy person and ask them, "Well, why did you do that?"
Yeah, no, I'm not.
They're crazy.
I'm not suggesting.
We'd rather just move along, you know, introduce local management by local people. We're the people who suffer the consequences of whatever happens. We're the ones who can take care of it. We don't really even want to have a debate or a discussion with the Forest Service or Fish and Wildlife. They don't want a debate. We don't want to debate them either.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting that we debate them. My question was, and we've got to take a quick break. When we come back, my question was, when they switched to a let it burn policy, I mean, whether the explanation is plausible or not, whether or not there was an adequate discussion, obviously there wasn't, but how do they rationalize it? Because they always do. I'm curious what the argument was at the time. We're going to come right back with you in 2 minutes. Thank our advertisers here. You're listening to KCNR, 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Trees, put them in a tree museum, and they charge the people $1.50 just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pay for a life, put up a parking lot.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
We're back. Hey, Mike, so talk to us about the petition that you've got circulating, and is it possible for people out of the state of Oregon to sign that petition?
We want everybody in the country to sign the petition. We are, and after all, asking all our sister states to please give us our land back. It requires, you know, a majority of the other states to vote in favor of it. So, yes, and we already have signers from last count, 28 states, including quite a few from California, that have signed our petition saying, yeah, give Oregon their land back. A lot of people have asked me, can we expand this petition to other states? And, you know, we're working on something like that, but we really need people from other states to take the initiative in their state. But certainly in Northern California, there's a whole lot of people that are very tired of having the federal government destroying their lives and livelihoods and watersheds when they know best how to take care of their own land.
Well, and nobody knows better than the land in their own backyard. And, you know, like in Trinity County, that entire county has fiscally been driven by its natural resources industry, which has been decimated by these policies and regulations.
Yeah, I'd say that's true of every county in Northern California. Shasta, Modoc, Tehama, they're all have a huge federal percentage ownership of their land, and that land is the resource land. Well, it is some of it, but it is a huge chunk. You know, the resources are more than the timber. It also includes the water. The water, probably in terms of dollar value, is more valuable than the timber. And the wildlife and the scenery and the air and the soils. These are all values, you know, that really do belong to the local people, have always belonged to the local people.
Well,
up until just the last 100 years,
and as we allow the forests to mushroom out of control, it takes water to grow all those trees. I mean, we're talking, you know,
water comes from the sky, but what runs off in the rivers,
sure,
in the streams, coming out of the springs, that water. That's the one you pay money for.
So, Mike, we've got a caller on the line. Pat, are you there?
Now we are. I heard a click.
Are you there, Pat?
Yep.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Do you have a question for Mike?
Well, I have a comment.
That we'll take that also.
Fire away.
Okay.
Boy, I can't hear Pat.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mike. I so much appreciate your being on the show. I just hope all the listeners have ears to hear what you're saying and take it to heart. And I would encourage everyone to sign your petition. But I'm thinking that, let's just say I were a well-meaning federal government employee who's going to review this. I would want to see what plan you have, specifics, who's going to do what, and how you're going to pay for taking care of the forest. So I was just wondering...
Pat, can you speak as loudly into the phone as possible?
I can't hear what you're saying.
I'm just wondering what plan you have to actually take over the forest in a practical sense. Who's going to do what and who's going to pay for it?
Cool. We'll relay that. Thank you, Pat.
Okay.
All right, Mike, the question is, on the site and in this program, how is that going to practically come together? The concept is solid, but then when you start looking at the specifics, who will take care of it, who will pay for that, how will that all come together? Can you give us a background on all of that?
Absolutely. We're first approaching the county commissioners because we want the land to go to the county, and we're trying to impress upon the county commissioners that they will be the democratic body in charge of that land. And one of the first things that we're doing is we're asking them to help us draft legislation, which will go to the state legislature, which will be asking the state government to fund a county public lands manager in every county in Oregon. And we want a department of public lands in every county, and we want that department and that manager to begin to do the inventory, get the maps, get the aerial photos, and draw up a management plan for those lands so that when the transition happens, the counties will be able to hit the ground running. And before the transition happens, the counties will have some hired help who can interface with the federal government today. So the counties can start thinking about these lands and how they want them to be managed. And then they can begin to lobby today to get the management that the counties want. One problem that we have is that the counties really, because they have not had the responsibility, they haven't really exercised the kind of visionary thinking required. They haven't gone to the federal government and said, you will do X, Y, and Z. You will coordinate with us. This is what we want done on the lands today. The counties haven't done that. We want them to kind of get ready to do that, get in the mode of doing that, hire some people that will start doing that, and we want the state to pay for it, because the truth is, our counties are insolvent. Because there have been no payments to counties, from timber receipts, payments in lieu of taxes, and because our economies are so bad, the counties are having to open the jails and let the criminals out. They have closed the libraries. They're laying off employees because they can't do the basic functions of roads, schools, public health, and safety. And so we're asking the state, please put a guy in there, or a gal, who will begin to take these responsibilities, work for the county on behalf of the commissioners, under their instruction, reports to them, but paid for by the state, and so we can start addressing these problems. And eventually have a set up infrastructure so that when the transition of land happens, we can start operating immediately. There's just cutting in my county, in Linn County, where Lebanon, Albany of Oregon, there's 500,000 acres of federal land growing 1,000 board feet per acre per year. That's a sustainable annual harvest of 500 million board feet a year, and at a very conservative stumpage rate of $200, it's $100 million a year that would come into the county. more than doubling the county budget. So if it was just managed on a sustainable way, the county budget problems would be solved. If we got just a tiny percentage of that, it would still be a great boon to the county. And maybe they wouldn't have to close down public health. Maybe they wouldn't have to close down the jails. Maybe we could have libraries again. These are the kind of things that we want, the same things that other counties have. We don't want to be the poorest county in the nation when, in fact, we are one of the wealthiest on paper because of our natural resource base. This is also true of Siskiyou County and Trinity County and Shasta County.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be on the welfare roll.
You know, and it's funny, Mike, when you say that, because I was thinking about that this morning when I was driving in. I just think about everything that's happening. I mean, reading our newspaper locally is one of the most depressing things that you can do. But just because of the crime, I mean, there are shootings and carjackings and burglaries every single day now in Shasta County, in the city of Redding limits. But None of this had to happen. None of this was by accident. This is not necessary. This is not what, you know, some folks like to spin it as capitalism gone amok. I mean, we had a very healthy economy, low crime rates. Everyone was prospering. This did not have to happen.
You know, we want the lands to remain public, but we want them to be productive. Because when they're not, it breeds crime and abuse. It breeds what am I trying to say? It makes the outlook of the future bleak. The children leave. There's no jobs here. People look ahead and they see nothing but problems, and they get bitter and desperate. But our rights in public land go all the way back to the Magna Carta. You know, in when William the Conqueror, the French came and conquered England, and they started taking all the land, and people like Robin Hood were living in Sherwood Forest, which didn't belong to them. It belonged to the kings, because the kings took over all the land. And there was a revolution happened, and they got King John on the field of Runnymede and at sword point, made him sign the Magna Carta, which is Latin for major charter. And there were a few minor charters, among them the charter of Henry, who was John's son, that said people have a right on public land to hunt, to fish, to harvest trees, to harvest food. These rights go back, you know, 800 years, and they're fundamental to our common law, and they are the precursor of our own Constitution. We really do have rights on our own public land, and to deny those is to deny something that's very essential to our culture and our cultural philosophy. And that's what's happened. And that's why people are acting out, you know, in ways that are so destructive culturally. But if we got control over it again, and we let people back onto the land to do the things that we need to do that are beneficial to all of us, then I think there would be a great renaissance in the Pacific Northwest.
Well,
Not only would there be economic growth, there would be a kind of a moral and ethical and cultural growth.
And you know, and a point to be made before we go to break is that it wouldn't just happen in the Pacific Northwest or the West Coast, because so much of what occurs here based on agriculture and, well, any natural resource, a healthy natural resource environment, is that's what feeds the rest of the country.
Well, and it builds their houses and all the rest of the thing. Look at all the timber.
Yeah,
I mean, we cut it. We grow more. It's a renewable resource. It was never trees were never meant to be hugged. And on that note, or sung to.
It's costing the rest of the country $10 billion a year to burn us out and mismanage our lands. We'd save them that money right off the top. Here's $10 billion.
Yeah, and if we were truly worried about, you know, air pollution and all that, you know, forest fires are awesome for the air.
Yeah.
We're going to come back with you in 2 minutes. You are listening to We the People Radio. Follow us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
Got to give it up, Elizabeth.
Oh, I thought that was the tree hugging song. I was going to say it's kind of active. You get barkle over your shirt doing that.
There you go. Hey, we're back.
If I got to give it up, you're referring to the forests.
Oh, I get it. Wasn't a dancing song for the trees. I get it.
I'm tightening up my little microphone here. Ah, that's better. Hey, welcome back. Hey, we're going to take a slight detour. We've got Josh on the line. Josh is going to talk to us a little bit about the Houndsman legislation that's going before the Natural Resources Committee in Sacramento. And in addition to...
They're not the natural... Let Josh do it. Okay. It's not natural resources on this one.
Okay. But I'd like to kind of get an idea for those that think, well, I don't hunt. Why would I care? What some of the economic trickle-down effects would be, because there's always ancillary businesses that spring from every activity.
Hit it, Josh.
Good morning. How are you?
We are super.
Great to hear. Well, yes, as you said, we are in a pretty tough fight. We are currently up against the Humane Society of the United States, the world's largest anti-hunting, and to be honest, an animal use organization in the world. First to as it relates to the use of animals is in the form of Senate Bill 1221. 1221 would criminalize the use of dogs for...
Josh, we're going to have to click back over and have you call us back again.
Josh, are you on a speakerphone by chance?
No, cell, I think. Okay, try calling us back. All right, we're going to quickly shift back over. Mike, take over the forest again.
Yeah, I think it's a good question that you asked a break or two ago about motivation.
Yeah,
and
about that.
Why they are letting the forest burn. And I think that it goes to a narrative that exists, which is mythological and kind of destructive, but it's the notion that, ultimately at its base, the notion that human beings are a toxic infection, a pathogen on the planet, and that nature is a vengeful goddess that is punishing us for being so toxic. And this is a kind of theology, really, or what I call a narrative, that has been promulgated for a while. I don't know how long, but and various permutations of this. But the real truth of the matter is, people have been here taking care of the land for 10,000 years and longer. And the residents, the first residents, came with skills of fire, how to burn landscapes in order to create the necessities of survival. And they did so, and they created berry fields and root crop prairies and nut and fruit orchards in order to... survive and thrive in these lands. They brought this technology with them and they applied it and have been applying it for 10,000 years. Human set fire, anthropogenic fire, by which they created an anthropogenic mosaic of types across the landscape, trial and error, but also through traditional ecological knowledge, to provide themselves with the kind of things they needed to sustain their culture. They didn't sit back and allow fuels and thickets to build up to the point where catastrophic fires occurred, because that would have wiped them out. That would have, you know, if you destroy 1 million acres and it's what you depend on for your livelihood, and you have nothing to fall back on, you will die out as a people. And they, and just human beings knew that they couldn't allow this to happen. This, our ability as human beings to take over the planet as we have in the last 50,000 years really comes from our use of technologies and understanding how what we do impacts the land, the vegetation, the wildlife. So when people say we need to put natural fire back on the land, it's kind of a denial of humanity, of the presence of humanity, of the skill of humanity, of the humanness of humanity that has been here for so long. What we really need to put back on the land is stewardship, which is our birthright, which is our heritage, and the legacy we wish to leave to our children. We need to reconnect with the land the way people used to be until our very modern era. Only recently have we lost the traditional ecological knowledge. Only recently have we stopped caring for the land. It's not necessary to be the way we are today. Instead, it's very easy to bring back the stewardship and the caretaking. We are, in fact, caretakers of nature. We need to do that, to take that responsibility, and we can, and it's not difficult. What's really impeding it, though, is the federal government and the various groups that seem to hold sway with the federal government that are creating this narrative of toxicity and dehumanization of the landscape.
Hey, Mike, we've got we have another caller on the line. We have Jeff from Anderson.
Hello, good morning, everybody.
Hey, Jeff, fire away.
I just want to make a comment about our natural resources. Well, first, let me start off by saying I don't think the government's the best handlers of our natural resources, because it can restrict the supply and increase the price, which gives them more tax dollars overall and gives us a lot less, just a lot more cost. And then with our natural resources, there's no excuse that in this country that we should have to pay the amount of money that we're paying for water, electric. We should be creating water reservoirs. We should be having powerhouses built. I don't understand the left ideals that says that we need to have a lot less for a lot more. It just doesn't make any sense. I don't understand why the average person doesn't pick up on that either.
We'll just give that a moment of silence.
I have to agree, you know. But on the other hand, we are a democracy and we are a culture. And I'm not opposed to the government owning land. I just think the government that owns it should be the local government. We don't want to privatize the land. We would like the counties to own it, though, because the counties are immediate and proximate. And the county government is something you can be a part of, and you can talk to your commissioners, and you can kick them out if you don't like them. The federal government is so distant and so remote and governed by such an odd set of laws that we have no say-so about, that it's become unfunctional or dysfunctional. and so we'd like to bring it home. Bring it home. We want to use our resources, but we don't want to abuse them. We'd like to have reservoirs and power, and all these things are important, but not to the extent that we destroy our wildlife, because we want our wildlife too. It's ironic that we've spent so much to save the spotted owl, and we haven't saved it. We've actually destroyed it. We're ready to save it. We can do that on a local level. It can't evidently be done on a federal level.
Well, we on that happy note. We all know that if it's being done on a federal level, it becomes all confused. Actually, on a state level, it usually becomes confused. We have an easy bill pending talking about potentially a very small tax on timber that might do some good things. The trick is, once it goes back through all the committees and it comes up for a vote, who knows what it'll look like and what will happen to it. So the closer to the people that the decisions and the control lie, when you start looking at county government and at this point you'd have to do it by county, that I totally agree with your solution. I think most people do. You see that the bigger it gets, it's almost so we've got a million analogies for that. Too many cooks in the kitchen, many chiefs, not enough Indians. It just makes a mess.
The further away the solutions are and the power, the less control you have at the local level.
Exactly.
I mean, how much control can you have in Shasta County? The decisions are made in Sacramento.
All right. And on that note, we're going to take a quick two-minute break. And we are up against the top of the hour here pretty swiftly. So, folks, if you have questions, better call us right away. We're going to pop in with Josh Bronis when we return. We're going to talk about the Hound Bill that comes up on Tuesday, so you guys are all up to speed. And we'll be back with Mike here on the forest issues here. KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
Streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
We're back. We've got 10 minutes before we wrap today, and so we're quickly going to go to Josh, who is on the phone, and he's going to talk to us about...
Yep. We think he's on the phone.
Okay.
We think he's on the phone.
We will find out.
We've had so much fun with the phone this morning.
We have. We actually have had more activity on the phones.
I was just saying about how much fun we had getting the people in, out, and on and off.
Yes. And is he with us,
Bob's over there,
Bob?
Madly switching, flipping switches.
Is he with us?
Josh is here.
Josh, go for it.
Yes. Good morning.
Oh, my gosh, we can hear you. That's awesome.
Okay, let him talk.
Yes, don't you love cellular technology?
We do.
Not really.
Well, yes, as I was saying, we're up against a pretty tough fight against the Humane Society of the United States. They've introduced Senate Bill 1221, which would criminalize the use of dogs for the pursuit of bobcat and bear for both recreational hunting as well as for research purposes. It would also allow any Department of Fish and Game employee to kill a dog that they thought was threatening to injure a bear or bobcat, and then it would also prevent the owner of that dead dog from having any kind of legal recourse, whether criminal or civil, against that employee.
Now, Josh, real quickly, is this legislation really specific to those that are just hunting bobcat and bear, or is it broad enough that it could, for instance, affect maybe a professional forester who's in the woods doing timber inventory and happens to take his dog with him just as a guide? Because sometimes the dogs will kind of clue you in when there's a mountain lion.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The intent is to curb the hunting of bear and bobcat, and this is just another way of doing that. But the way that the language is crafted is that any dog, whether or not it was a hunting dog, a pet dog, a livestock dog, or in the example that you cite, a forester's dog, if that dog was determined to be threatening to hurt a bear or bobcat, they could be shot on sight by any Department of Fish and Game employee. Not just a fishing game warden, but all the way down to the people that answer the phone.
So if they're so willing to shoot a dog so quickly, it's clearly not about the love of animals.
No, that's exactly right. This is just the next step in the elimination of all use of animals, which is very much the intent of the Humane Society of the United States.
Yikes.
Not great. Okay, so swiftly, because we're going to talk to you next week. We're going to get the full scoop about that. We're going to start chatting about the Humane Society and all that jazz.
And what they really are.
Who they really are. And so for right now, this legislation is coming up in what committee?
In the Assembly, Water, Parks, and Wildlife Committee this coming Tuesday, June the 26th at 9 o'clock in room 4202 at the Capitol. So what we're really hoping is that anyone and everyone who is able would please come down and join us in making our voices heard against the Humane Society of the United States and these urban politicians that really have no sense of what it takes to manage our wildlife appropriately.
And if we were going to ask people to make some phone calls to folks on those committee, do you have any people on the bubble that we could focus on?
We absolutely do. We're targeting all of the Democrats on the Water Parks and Wildlife Committee. There are a few that we think are more vulnerable than others, but we want all of them to understand what the implications of this legislation are. So if your listeners would visit our website at californiahoundsman.com and then click on the Action Alert page, we will provide all of the names and phone numbers and fax numbers of each and every one of these Democrats.
Cool. CaliforniaHoundsman.com.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. And so if somebody did not have a computer, can you give us two names of people that they should call off the top of your pointy head there?
Yes. If they wanted to call myself, I'm the president for CHC. And your listeners can reach me at area code 530-867-2342 or send an email to president@CaliforniaHoundsman.com.
And we'll get that on our website at wethepeopleradio.us.
We appreciate your support.
People's
Thank
heads
so much,
just
Aaron.
Blew up.
And I don't think you have a pointy head, no matter what Aaron says. I'm sure you don't.
Okay, I just said it to be silly. Josh, thank you so much. So for people who want to get a hold of Josh, find out more, 867-2342, area code 530. And CaliforniaHoundsman.com, go to their Action Alert section.
And I very much look forward to talking to you next week and finding out the truth about the Humane Society.
We're looking forward to exposing them for who they really are. Thank
Can't
you so
wait
much
to hear it,
support.
Josh. Thank you.
Thanks, Josh.
Bye now.
See you next week.
Mike, back to you.
Got five hey, minutes. How do you want to leave it?
Well, I'd like people to please visit our website, give us our land back, .org, and read the material there, and particularly read the petition. And if you agree, please sign the petition. We're collecting we don't want your address or your email or your phone number, but we'd like your email. It's an email petition, and we want to know what county you live in, because we're working at the ground level, grassroots level, at the county level, so we're organizing by county. And it would be great if you would go there and check it out. If you're involved in politics, we especially would like you to come and check it out. If you're a county commissioner, we'd like to hear from you, because we want to have our issue discussed. We would like to bring this issue to the table. We'd like it to be something that we could debate about as a people.
And Mike, it's not just it's such a critical issue. I mean, it's pretty much everything.
Well, it's how we govern ourselves and how we relate to the world around us, and it's not abstract. It's mm-hmm. immediate and it's local, and it's something you can touch and feel and smell, and it's also about how we relate to each other. Are we going to be passive about this, or are we going to be active stewards of our own environment? Another thing too is that we're nonpartisan. Although it might seem like that there's one party or one sub-party there that supports us the most, and that might be true for now, ultimately, we want this question to be brought to everybody, regardless of their political leanings. Do you think we'd be better if we managed our land locally? Or is it better if we have some outside force like the federal government manage it for us?
Or even more importantly, how would you like to have your economy come back to life? How would you like to get your family off of food stamps? How would you like to get the crime rates down? How would you like the schools to improve? That's right. Pretty much in everybody's backyard. I mean, this really is in everyone's immediate life.
I certainly agree.
Well, just to stick on timber here, and I know we don't have a lot of time left, but just real quickly, we talk a lot about timber receipts, but there are a lot of people who don't know what that means. Can you give them a kind of a nutshell overview?
Well, the owner of the timber, when he has it cut, generally isn't the one that goes out and cuts it. They sell the timber on the stump, and they usually sell it for a certain price that's called stumpage, which means the buyer of the timber has the responsibility to go out and sever the tree from the stump and drag the log to the road and put it on a truck and haul it to a mill. And so the price that's delivered to the mill is a little different than the stumpage price because it costs something to do all that work. Generally, though, the person who owns the land is the one who is responsible for everything that happens. They get that stumpage price, but the contractor who comes out and pays it has to do what the landowner tells them to do and has to do it within the context of the forest practice laws. Oregon has one of the strongest forest practice laws in the nation. And the counties, should they own the land, would have to abide by the Oregon Forest Practices Act. And if the counties did own the land, when they cut, they would get 100% of the stumpage. They wouldn't have to share it with anybody. And this is where timber receipts are. They're really that stumpage price paid. And it's
but they go back to the community.
It goes to the county coffers, and it's really up to the people in the county to establish the county budget and how that money is spent.
So timber receipts are a great revenue source.
In forested counties, they certainly are.
Sure.
And, of course, in the Pacific Northwest here, from Northern California to Washington, we grow the best timber in the world, the bet that makes the best structural lumber, that grows the fastest. We could really house the world with our timber if it was necessary.
All right, guys.
Because ours is the best.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
GiveUsOurLandBack.org. Thanks, Mike. We really appreciate
Thanks,
you coming
Liz.
On.
Thanks, Aaron. Thanks, Bob.
All right, bye, kids. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Mike.
Talking about Houndsman.
Mike Dubrasich. No, Dubrasich.
There you go.
All right.
GiveUsOurLandBack.
GiveUsOurLandBack.org.
All right, and we learned a new word, stumpage. All right, Aaron, Elizabeth, thank you.
Bob, and as always.
And that is not somebody with one leg.
This is KCNR, Shasta Redding. Bye now. Good Lord's on high.